Thank you so much for joining us. Today we are going to discuss the findings from a national coaching survey conducted by Digital Promise in partnership with Learning Forward. We'll hear directly from Digital Promise about the prevalence of coaching and ideas for supporting and funding coaching in education. Learning Forward has been very happy to be partnering with Digital Promise on this effort to gather and share data about coaching. It supports our commitment to research and it aligns with our advocacy work for funding. Before we start, we'd like to get a sense for who is joining us today. So I'm going to put up a brief poll. It takes about a minute to gather and report the data. And if you could just indicate what your role is, that'll give us a sense for who we are talking to today. You should see the poll right at the bottom of the chat box. And while you are doing that poll, I'm going to quickly introduce who will be joining us today. We will start off with Casey Van Ostrand, the director of the Dynamic Learning Project at Digital Promise, who will discuss the survey and the report. We will then hear from Heather Logman, who is the executive director of organizational development from Baltimore County. Heather will share her perspective from the district level. Then we are very fortunate to have a whole panel of coaches with us today who represent a variety of programs and expertise, and they also will share their perspective about the report with us today. So the poll has ended, and let's see. Excellent. Okay, we have a lot of people who did not complete the poll, and I know it's hard to do if you're on the phone or not right in front of your computer, but we do have a fair number of coaches with us today and district leadership. So that is very, very exciting and the perfect audience for what we're about to talk about today. So just a few housekeeping details. As we are going through the webinar today, please put your questions in the chat box. We'll have several opportunities for questions and answers as we move along, and we'll try to get to as many questions as possible. Then I also want to let you know that this webinar is being recorded, and the recording, slides, and all resources and links will be shared with you in a follow-up email within a couple of days. So with that, we have a wonderful group of experts today, so I don't want to take up too much time, so I will turn it over to Casey Van Ostrand. Casey?
Hi, everyone. This is Casey from Digital Promise, and I'm really excited to have the opportunity to talk to you today about some of the work we're doing at Digital Promise around coaching, and specifically this coaching report that we released with Learning Forward a couple weeks ago. So I'm going to go through some things about Digital Promise and our work, and then share with you some of the key findings from the report. So at Digital Promise, we work at the intersections of educators, researchers, and developers to advance innovation in education. So you may be familiar with our projects that work across these stakeholder groups. And in all of our work, we believe in the power of networks, story, research, and engagement. And the project that I work on at Digital Promise is a project with a network of coaches called the Dynamic Learning Project. And also in all of our projects, we believe in these five principles of powerful learning, which I'll talk a little bit about today as well. So that powerful learning is authentic and relevant, and it's personal, connected, collaborative, and team-based, inquiry-focused, and builds ownership and agency. So we believe that this can apply for learning for educators as well as for students. And one of the reasons we think coaching is such a powerful form of professional learning is because it is all of these things. So as I mentioned, a program that we run with coaches, a network of coaches, is the Dynamic Learning Project. So the Dynamic Learning Project is an instructional coaching program that helps teachers use technology in impactful or powerful ways. So really focusing on power for learning for teachers. The Dynamic Learning Project has been implemented in 160 underserved schools across the country since 2017. We run this program in partnership with Google for Education and EdTech team, and you can see the 10 states that we've implemented this program in the last few years on the slide here. So this program really focuses on professional development for coaches and supporting the coaches in these schools across the country that we work with. So we have summer and winter institutes. The coaches receive mentoring and they have access to custom coaching tools and communities of practice. And we actually have a Dynamic Learning Project coach on the coach panel today, Danielle Johnson, who you'll get to hear from later in the webinar. So just a couple of findings from the Dynamic Learning Project that I wanted to share with you before we go into the coaching report, because the coaching report was sort of a extension of our Dynamic Learning Project work in that we work with schools across the country in implementing the Dynamic Learning Project, and we wanted to understand with this national coaching survey, you know, what coaching outside of those Dynamic Learning Project schools look like and how we can better support coaches in all schools. So in the Dynamic Learning Project, we learned that these are the characteristics of effective coaching programs. It's a partnership, it's voluntary and non-evaluative, it's personalized in terms of the needs and timing. So the coaching is meeting the needs of individual teachers and is aligned with when they need that support in terms of the timing. It consists of active learning so that teachers have enough time to try and evaluate new ideas. And it's also sustained over time, so it's not just a one-time thing. And the components of effective coaching programs are that it's that you would use a research-proven coaching model like the Dynamic Learning Project, that coaches are actually receiving coaching and mentorship, that there's professional learning communities for coaches, and there's tools and resources that coaches and administrators have access to, and a process for tackling progress and growth. So again, we learned all of these components of effective coaching programs in the Dynamic Learning Project, and we thought, well, we know what's working, but wanted to better understand what's actually happening in the field. And so that's why we partnered with Learning Forward to do a national coaching survey and release this report on the survey, kind of the state of the field and prevalence of coaching and the approaches to supporting coaching in education. So now I will go into what we learned from this report. So we received a total of 1,246 responses, so just over 1,200 total responses. 13.7% of all the respondents were not engaged in coaching. The demographics of these respondents didn't significantly differ from the overall population. So we focused our analysis on the 83% of respondents who reported being currently engaged in coaching in their schools or districts. And these responses were distributed across all 50 states in the U.S. The respondent profile, so of those 83% who reported currently being engaged in coaching, slightly more are served in school-based roles than in district-based roles, but we had a pretty even split there. So we had school-based respondents and district-based respondents. The majority of respondents in terms of their role were coaches, followed by administrators, educators, and other, and those included curriculum coordinators, instructional specialists, and special education support staff. Respondents engaged with coaching are distributed across urban, suburban, and rural regions, so pretty roughly evenly split there. And more than two-thirds of respondents are from schools or districts with more than 40% of students qualifying for free and reduced lunch. So some of the findings that I want to highlight today, and you'll hear more about this hopefully from the panel in terms of how they're seeing this play out in the coaching that they're engaged in. But on the coach workload, our findings sort of painted a picture of coaches having a lot of responsibilities, which won't be a surprise to any of the coaches on this call, I don't think. You know, if you're a coach at the school or at the district level, you're pulled in a lot of different directions and expected to serve in a lot of support roles. And so we saw that 40% of school-based coaches are also classroom teachers. So actually not even in support roles, but still teaching classes and doing coaching as a part-time role. And then almost half of school-based coaches are serving more than 16 teachers at once, while 65% of district-based coaches are serving more than 16 teachers concurrently. So again, that's a pretty heavy workload for coaches and split across several teachers. And what we found in the Dynamic Learning Project, and our recommendation would be that in order to see the most impact as a result of coaching, coaches ideally would be working full-time with approximately 10 teachers at a time for 8 weeks. And that's not exactly what we saw in the responses to this survey. So we think, you know, if it is possible to look at coaches' workload for administrators to support coaches in working with a fewer amount of teachers and having more time to work with those teachers, be a recommendation. In terms of teachers reporting their time spent with their coach, less than 50% of teachers meet with their coach biweekly, and when they do, they spend less than 30 minutes with their coach. So kind of related to the coach's workload and working with several teachers at a time and having other responsibilities or potentially still being still teaching classes, that leaves less time for coaches to meet with teachers that they're working with. And the majority of teacher respondents who found coaching valuable spend at least 30 to 60 minutes with their coach when they have those meetings with their coaches. So teachers who find coaching more valuable are spending more time with their coach. And as a recommendation from our Dynamic Learning Project research, we'd recommend that coaches should try to spend a minimum of 30 minutes with each of their teachers weekly. And as I mentioned earlier, sustained and just-in-time coaching is most effective. Some other findings that we wanted to highlight today is the use of technology in coaching and the difference in coach and teacher perceptions of use of technology that we found in this survey. So we asked both coaches and teachers the same question. We asked coaches how they're using technology with their teachers and across different areas. And similarly, we asked teachers how they report that their coach is using technologies on those same areas. So what you can see in these graphs here is that the top is the coach responses and the bottom is the teacher. And so on every category, the teacher reporting how their coach is using technology with them is lower. So this is kind of saying that coaches think they're using technology and supporting their teachers and using technology more so than teachers actually think coaches are. So that was just interesting in that, you know, that potentially points to coaches needing more support in using technology with their teachers. And again, we looked at these responses in comparison with teachers who found coaching valuable versus teachers who did not find coaching valuable. And the teachers who found coaching valuable, which is the top graph on this slide, reported that their coaches were using technology more than the teachers who did not find coaching valuable. So again, we think there's a need for coaches to be supported in how they're using technology with their teachers and supporting teachers in using technology with their students. And some key findings on funding and supporting coaches with funding that I wanted to highlight today are that the majority of coaches are funded on a year-to-year basis, so they're not funded long-term, and school-based coaches are less likely to have long-term funding than district coaches. And coaches are funded primarily by Title II federal funds, which are designated to support preparing, training, and recruiting high-quality teachers and principals. And I listed some other sources of funding there that we found in the report. And I don't think this will be much of a surprise to the coaches and district admin that are on the call either. But I think we wanted to really highlight this and surface it as somewhere as a recommendation that can be made and that we as a field can think about in terms of how to make longer investments in coaching that could support these comprehensive programs and maintain continuity. So that's something that we really care about at Digital Promise and I know at Learning Forward. So we hope to kind of continue doing more work in this area and how that funding to support coaches can be more long-term. And so I just highlighted that's the first thing on this list here for areas for further exploration, the availability and sustainability of funding for coaches, and what are those barriers to using state or federal funds for long-term supportive coaching and what can be done about that. And the barriers that exist in schools and districts that reported not being currently engaged in coaching. So when I first was looking at the respondent profile, I mentioned that 13.7% of the respondents reported not being currently engaged in coaching. And we saw that the demographics did not significantly differ from those engaged in coaching in this report. So there wasn't something that kind of stood out that we could hypothesize might be the reason, a location or urbanicity or percent free and reduced lunch. So we'd like to look at that a little bit more and find out what some of those barriers to being engaged in coaching might be. And then we'd also like to look more at the coach access to programs that provide professional development and support for coaching. I think that most of the coaches who are on the panel today will talk about the need for coaches to have coaches and mentorship and support, and we didn't get a clear picture in this survey of what that looks like and the quality of that support that coaches are receiving themselves. So to conclude here with my section, I just wanted to make sure you all had access to this report. So find it at bit.ly/coachingandeducation and on the Digital Promise website. So there's some more findings in the report. You can look at the graphs and all the information that I shared today. And we're just really excited about putting this out there and continuing to work in this area and support coaches and both in terms of funding and their professional support. So thank you, Elizabeth, for giving me the chance to talk about the findings today. It's hard for me to keep track of any questions in the chat, but Ariel, if you saw any questions that come up that you wanted to share now, we can do that now or later when we have time for Q&A.
Thank you, Casey. There are currently no questions in the chat box for you, but I think there are a lot of questions in that our panel of coaches can address later on. There are some issues that are resonating around funding and support, and especially time, what the implications are for time for coaching in schools. So I'm hoping that the panel can address that in a couple of minutes. So now I am really pleased to introduce Heather Lagerman, who's going to give us the district level perspective. Heather is the Executive Director of Organizational Development for Baltimore County, where she oversees a range of district initiatives, including coaching and leadership development. She is also a volunteer for Maryland CODES, which is a nonprofit focused on increasing access to computer science learning and professional learning. And you'll hear about that from Heather in a few minutes. Heather is also part of the Learning Forward family. She is the past chair of the Learning Forward Foundation and the past president of Learning Forward's Maryland affiliate. So we are really especially happy to have her with us today. So with that, I will turn it over to you, Heather.
Thank you so much, Elizabeth. What a wonderful introduction. And I'm really honored to be here as part of the Learning Forward family and public education and a volunteer in the nonprofit area because as Casey just alluded to, all of the findings from this report are a fantastic opportunity to make an entry point to start the coaching conversation, no matter where you are, with evidence. And I think that's what resonates so much frequently when you're trying to advocate for incorporating coaching and the impact it can have, is to be able to start that conversation with evidence so that, as I saw some folks saying in the chat box, so that PLCs can be created, that time, the schedule, and the budget can all align, because one of the things that we talk frequently about with principals is that their budget and their schedule shows what they value. And so we'd love to have coaching be paramount on their list. So there is a whole landscape, and that's why we've got a plant there and some imagery for you. There's a whole landscape of coaching support. And the work of Digital Promise and the Learning Foundation in this report clearly shows how technology can be leveraged to provide more personalized and timely support for teachers and the value of a sustained job-embedded approach to professional learning that includes that critical coaching component. And so on this slide, we show that the report highlights that the first bullet, school-based instructional technology coaches, and it also shows the rest of the whole constellation, not all-inclusive, but just a few of the different stars in the constellation of coaching opportunities. And in my role, both as an executive director in a public school system and in my volunteer work with computer science, it's been exciting to work with such a variety of types of coaching and explore the impact and the purpose of each type. And so this next slide shows a little bit about code.org. If you're not familiar with it, I was attracted to volunteer for the international nonprofit when they shared their professional learning model, and it was very well aligned with Learning Forward and my beliefs that align with Learning Forward's philosophy that really we need to create regional hubs for professional learning and coaching instead of airdropping in talent. And I love that image because we really need to have everyone in schools collaborating, coaching, and working together to learn and grow in their environment. So as I continue to do some work, and this gives you a little bit of an overview if you aren't familiar with the program, the concept behind Maryland Codes and Code.org is that teachers get their in-person professional development, they get model coaching, quarterly workshops, and all of that to support their implementation and being able to take risks and encourage their students to do the same with incorporating technology in their curriculum. And one of the things that I came to see as a foundation of a trusting relationship is needed to truly engage in that meaningful coaching relationship. And so when I started to also see similar needs in leadership within our school system, it really became apparent that in order to make headway, people must know that you care about them, and it's simple. In order to take risks and open themselves to deep learning, they need to know that you believe and care about them. And that's when, as we're looking at spending Title II funds and other resources, it became really apparent that we can continue to just pour resources into people, but it might not be the best use of resources until we have whole human beings who can engage in the learning and really feel comfortable to be brave, not perfect, and to dive into true learning and risk-taking. And so in the spirit of trying to figure out how to get some of that foundational relationship building experience for people to maximize their coaching learning, I sought out whole person coaching to build those skills, and you'll see that in the yellow box down below there. And Courtney Suttis will be talking a little bit about that later on the panel, the power of that relationship building and the whole person coaching experience. One of the things you'll see here is tried to just put a few of the different types of, sorry, if we can go back one slide, sorry. some of the different elements in the constellation of coaching support, because one of the things that when we did the whole person coaching experience, we found that we really needed to clarify how to get from need to support. A lot of you might ask, okay, we know there's a need, but how do we translate that into getting people connected with the support that they need? And that's what we're going to actually be looking about. So the timing of this request was perfect because I was really excited to read the report and hear your ideas a little later on, because as a team, we're getting together to now take all the types of coaching we've experienced in our school system, all the different varieties, and clearly define them, talk about the stakeholders involved, the research that supports it, what it needs to look like, and how can everyone access the appropriate supports responsibly at the appropriate time and make that communication clear. And one of the things that I love that the report points out is that time is a critical factor here, and the sustained interactions over time will cause great satisfaction in the coaching relationship. And when we look at the teacher retention issues and the things that we're having in education right now, it's a really exciting opportunity to provide a reason for people to stay and to build a relationship and to feel part of a family in their school buildings. It also focuses on the strength-driven approach to deepening coaching and mentoring cultures, and we think that's a very important element as well. And we look at it kind of as a living laboratory of learners to create this coaching and mentoring culture for growth. And if we click to the next slide, as Elizabeth mentioned earlier, I was, as a part of the foundation, I was privileged to be able to work with Steve Barkley, who was on the board of the foundation, and he is truly committed to a culture of coaching. And if you do not check out his blogs on Sunday, that's become my favorite Sunday morning reading. He had a recent one, and the link is here for your reference, where he talked about how to build a mentoring and coaching culture, and also provided evidence. So you'll have the evidence from the report that Casey just shared, as well as now the Harvard Business Review article that is referenced here, talking about the concept of viewing coaching as both a responsibility and a reward, and building that into a coaching culture where everyone feels that they have an access point, a responsibility to be, I love the image, a mentor of a moment, where everyone feels that it's their daily interaction to develop and grow with one another. And that's the foundation of a healthy school and workplace. So we're looking at, if coaching is your common core value, how can we imagine the possibilities where we're all able to really give and receive help as part of daily interactions and foster a true community of learners like the learning communities that Casey was talking about in the Digital Promise report on powerful coaching environments. And this last slide is part of his blog as well. There's another report in there that he referenced, and it clearly shows the power of unlocking capacity and capability through coaching and looking at the impact of retaining teachers, building capacity, and truly using coaching as a vehicle to support from the inside out. And I'm really excited to see this report as a capstone, because there's been many years of anecdotal evidence. I've done a lot of work at the state level as well, and New Teacher Center was integrally involved in building an induction program in the state of Maryland, and we had a lot of evidence. They've done some I3 work, and now we have another piece of documentation to really use to advocate for the need for a commitment to funding for coaches, because I'm pretty sure that everyone who signed on to this webinar is similar in the shared belief that the coaching role is the key to sustaining high-impact professional learning and student achievement and growth.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Heather. Thank you for joining us and giving the district perspective, but also bringing in the importance of holistic support and underscoring again this issue about how important it is to think about time, reallocating time, where do we sort of find small or large bits of time to fit in this important relationship building with the coach. So thank you for highlighting that again. Now, I am really thrilled to be able to introduce our panel of coaches. And I will say that one thing that's been highlighted so far in this webinar is that I need some coaching around slide advancement. So I apologize for that. But here you have our fabulous panel of coaches. I'll give a quick introduction, but each individual is going to highlight any relevant experience as they're answering some of these questions as we go forward. Jody Flowers, I will start with you, is the district coach for the My Teaching Partner coaching program in Waco, Texas. He has experience as a classroom teacher, campus administrator, and district leader. He has published articles in Learning Forward, Learning Professional, about the My Teaching Partner program, as well as in the Texas Administrators Texas Study about how administrators play a special role in teacher growth. Throughout all of his work, Jody is committed to teacher improvement and growth. So thank you so much, Jody, for joining us today. Next, we'll go to Danielle. Oh, sorry, thank you. Next is Danielle Johnson, who is a dynamic learning coach at the Barbara Bush Middle School in Carrollton Farmers ISD near Dallas, Texas. Danielle works to improve educational equity by empowering teachers to leverage technology, especially as it relates to racial and educational equity. She also hosts a Turn and Talk podcast, where she interviews teachers about what is going on in their classrooms and regularly writes and presents on these topics. Danielle has taught 6th grade world cultures, 9th grade world geography, and 11th grade U.S. history. Thanks, Danielle, for joining us today. Last but not least, we have Courtney Studdis, who is a professional coach certified by the International Coaching Federation. Courtney works with individuals, schools, and corporations offering coaching, training, and facilitation, and provides individual coaching sessions for educators across the world. Courtney's work is rooted in empowerment and compassion, as well as direct, efficient communication. And one of the things that I'm hoping Courtney will talk about today is her use of a strategy called Ask the Powerful Question, which sort of gets to each individual's purpose in engaging in the coaching relationship. Can you, Courtney and Danielle, can you just say hello so that we know you're ready to speak?
Yeah, sure, I'm so excited to be here. Thank you for having
us. Okay, great. Yes, thank you for joining us. Thank you. All right, so let's get started. Let me start with Courtney and ask you to just first share anything that resonated with you from the findings that Casey reviewed, and maybe bring in some of your own experience as you talk about what struck you in the findings.
Sure. I am so thrilled to see the report, like what Heather said, that's showing the data and evidence of the power of coaching. And even without being a witness to these sessions or knowing what folks are coaching around, what I find in my style of coaching is by setting aside time where you can reflect, you can ask questions or be asked questions, you can start to get in greater alignment with who you are and what you value and how you work. Then that reverberates out into all the different roles. So if you're an educator, your life outside of work, I think what's so missing is connection, and including in that is connection to self. And I think coaching provides the space where you can reconnect to yourself and your mission, why you're doing what you're doing. And then there's a lot of time for creativity and brainstorming and getting rid of what no longer serves you. And so I'm not surprised that the data came back the way it did, and I'm just so happy for what this means for coaching in a systemic way, especially in schools.
Great, thank you. All right, next let's go to Danielle. So Danielle, you are a dynamic learning coach yourself, and I know that you have moved into that role from once being part-time coach and part-time teacher, which I imagine was actually full-time coach plus full-time teacher. So I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about what resonated with you and the findings, given your experience.
One of the things that made coaching successful on my campus, which is a public middle school in Dallas County called Barbara Bush Middle School, and we are an urban suburban district with a very diverse population. One of the things that made coaching so successful on my campus and in the campuses in my district is that we as coaches had a coach through the Dynamic Learning Project, and that's the program that my district chose to go with. I had somebody that I checked in regularly with. We had at least once a month one-on-one conversations via Google Hangouts. We had at least once a month conversations with a group of coaches. But not only was that mentorship relationship important to me, it was incredibly important to my principal as well. So my mentor was also his mentor for this program. So that mentorship meant that I could handle that emotional load that comes with coaching. Teaching kids is hard. Teaching grownups is very hard. And I don't know that I would have been emotionally supported as well had we not had that mentorship. And I think that that is one of, I think, the most important findings in this study, is that there needs to be some support for coaches, meaningful support for coaches. I know more about people's marriages than I really have ever wanted to. So we always have to get past that small talk and what's going on in their life before we can get into, things in their classroom. And I'm not a counselor. I'm not a psychologist. So I didn't have training in that, but my mentor did. So that really supported me so that I could be there to fully support my teachers.
Thank you. We can definitely talk about this sort of nested system of supports as we get more into the details. But Now I'd like to turn to Jody. And Jody, I know that you work a lot with a video-enabled coaching model. So I'm wondering if you could share your thoughts about the report findings.
Oh, yeah. The big thing that stuck out to me was the data from the frequency and duration that the coaches are meeting with their coachees. You know, I come from an administrator's background in which I was doing most of my observations through an evaluative tool, which was not always a popular way to enter a classroom. So being able to meet with coaches more frequently, or with my coachees more frequently in a non-evaluative role has really opened up the relationship building that is necessary for a successful program. As far as the technology, that's really the one thing that MTP does is we video actual lessons and are able to take a strengths-based approach by clipping 1 to 2 minute segments of what the teacher's doing really well in a particular dimension that we want to work on. And just having that access to watch that, so that the subjectivity of the coach and the coachee is taken out, that we can watch body language, we can watch facial expressions, we can listen to the words and tone and meaning behind those, really impacts the reflection and discussions that we have. And because we're doing that biweekly, the relationship gets built around not only the substance of what we're talking about, but the anticipation that we get to it frequently and that our reflections are put back into practice pretty quickly. So that's the one thing that stuck out to me. Another thing I would say about the technology is it really makes a big difference when you are setting up a video conference with a teacher to coach them through some things, because like a lot of us, we knew that, you know, for me at 2 o'clock today, I had to get on this webinar and I was expected to be there. Whereas if it was a face-to-face meeting, teachers can go start copies, run to the restroom, you know, a kid can come in and ask for makeup work or whatever the case may be, and that can really impede on the focus of that meeting. So being able to use technology to do those kinds of things really emphasizes the importance of the coaching meeting.
Okay, great, thank you. Danielle, would you be willing to just share a little bit, just building off what Jody was just saying, can you talk a little bit about how leveraging technology supports your coaching goals?
One of my main jobs with teachers is to help them use technology in more impactful ways in the classroom. That means helping them work on their own personal workflow, but also using different engagement tools and assessment tools. But then, even more importantly, letting the students get creative and solve problems and challenges using technology. So I'm in the classroom with teachers as they're trying new things and as they're doing things, so that if something goes wrong or, you know, they're unsure about something, I'm right there to troubleshoot with them or to model for them or to help students with problems. So that helping teachers use technology better in the classroom has definitely impacted all facets of education on our campus, not just with our, you know, the academic side of assessments and getting data back faster, but also teachers aren't spending as much time grading. Teachers are able to connect with each other and students in new ways. We've streamlined a lot of our in-school communication processes. So technology has not just impacted my coaching, but it's impacted teachers' classroom practices and entire school practices.
Great, thank you. We're gonna go back to Casey in a little bit to ask her about the findings around impact from the survey. But Danielle, I just wanted to follow up on a note you put on in the chat box about teachers reporting lower stress. Can you just mm-hmm. talk a little bit about that?
It's really stressful to try something new in the classroom, especially if you're giving students the opportunity to present their learning in new ways, such as, you know, making a podcast, making a video, designing something in Tinkercad for a 3D printer. That's not something that teachers are generally used to doing, and the teacher may or may not know how to do that activity themselves, which is great because our kids know how to use YouTube. They can figure a lot of that stuff out. But teachers feel a lot more confident when I'm in the classroom with them, especially the first or second time that they're trying something new. So they have way less fear of trying new things in the classroom and engaging kids in new ways. They also have told me that just having me on campus, able to come in at a moment's notice when needed, is a big stress reliever off of them. I, you know, teach them new things whenever there's new initiatives or new things they have to do at school that involve technology, you know, progress monitoring using large amounts of spreadsheet data. I will sit down with teachers and go through how they want, how the district may want this done. And if there's questions about that, I have the capacity to go to our district leadership and ask the questions that the teachers may not, and be able to actually refine processes with our district administration and campus level administration to make that easier on teachers. So my job is basically teacher support, teacher job satisfaction. Happy teachers mean successful students. It means lower turnover. It means fewer sick days or mental health days. And it means that teachers are more excited about what they're doing in the classroom.
Great. Excellent. Yeah, I think sometimes it's a challenge to draw a line from a support like coaching to teacher and improvement in teacher attrition. But I think you've just done it really nicely, so thank you. So now I want to talk a little bit about workload. One of the findings that struck me in the report was just the number of teachers that coaches are working with and the limited amount of time as a real factor in how much they can accomplish. So I'm wondering, Courtney, maybe we can start with you. I'm wondering if you could comment on the finding in the report and the recommendation that coaches work with only about 10 teachers at a time and engage in multi-week coaching cycles. Just curious if you have thoughts about how realistic that is.
I do. So my last class of coaches, because I also train folks to be coaches or at least to have coaching skills, I had a lot of instructional coaches in my class and a lot of people that had workloads that were shown in this report, you know, upwards of 16 and 18. And there's burnout, and it's not to say that they weren't doing their jobs and they weren't being effective, but there's personal burnout and loss of energy. And again, it, you know, especially when you're doing deep work like this and you're doing all your other jobs as an educator, it's not going to help the people that you're working with and helping if you yourself are drained. And so I see these coaching tools as a way to fill your own cup so that you can pour into the cups of others. So in the report, when the recommendation was around 10 people, and to have sustained contact, I think that makes sense. I think, you know, even along the lines of balance, too much of a good thing. If you're doing wonderful coaching work but you're spread too thin, there's going to be impact on you and the people that you serve. And I also agree with Danielle of coaches having coaches so that they can be sustained and they can be healthy and they can be you know, they can thrive also.
Thank you. Thank you. So, Jody, let's hear from you how you find the time and what your workload is like, if you're willing to share, and what you think about the recommendations about 10 teachers and multi-week cycles.
So currently, I have 16 teachers in my MTP program here. So that's a bi-weekly meeting with them, and on the off weeks I'm not meeting, I'm watching their video, clipping their progress, writing a prompt for them to reflect on. I'm also the content specialist for high school English here in Waco as well. So to say that we're spread thin is completely accurate, and taking the time to refill your own cup is crucial to being a good coach. As far as I would love to see districts be able to have dedicated full-time coaches. I think 10 to 12 on a biweekly cycle is really doable. I think the reason that's not happening is because I think a lot of schools want to have quote-unquote coaches and have a option for teachers to be coached. But unless there's a good research-based program for them to follow, that's not really sustainable. You've got to have something that you can fall back to that's really evaluating the coach's performance. That's where a coach of a coach comes in. It's been crucial and vital to me because I wasn't familiar with this program that we're using. So without my coach, I would be pretty much handcuffed in what I could do with my teachers. Funding comes into a lot of that, being able to have enough coaches to meet the number of teachers that are out there. One thing that I found extremely important, and I think it was Heather that said it, that coaching has to be marketed as a high performance tool and not a punitive, consequence for a certain action a teacher's doing or not doing. So that's a key ingredient to any district that wants to improve their coaching impact in schools, is to present it as that high performance tool and not a punitive consequence.
Okay, that's a very important point. Thank you. And I'm wondering,
can I jump in about that? This is Danielle.
Yeah.
As a campus-based coach, and we have done 2 years of the about 10 teachers on about 8-week cycles, and it has worked really well. Some teachers stay longer on the cycle. Some teachers do 1 or 2 cycles. Some teachers, want to be on it all year because they like trying new things and like having that support. But like Jody said, this should never be seen as punitive or evaluative, and that's really down to that top-down culture in your district or in your campus. So if any time an adult comes in a teacher's classroom, they feel the need to perform and put on a show and do something different, then coaching really isn't going to work because they're constantly putting on a show. I need to be in the classroom when teachers, are trying new things or when they are struggling, but it has to come from them. So the culture of your campus and your district having if I'm struggling and I ask for help, that's seen as a sign of strength, not as something bad. That has to be a very active part of your campus culture. And if it's not, then coming in the classroom is just going to be seen as evaluative, and the teachers are just going to be putting on a show, which doesn't improve anybody's performance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting. It almost speaks to what Heather was talking about earlier about the constellation of support, that it's really a culture of support and learning and growth rather than coaching being seen as a punitive relationship.
And that goes down to who they choose as coaches as well. It needs to be positive, non-judgmental people that other people feel comfortable sharing their struggles with.
Right, and which speaks to the coaches of coaches as well. So, Danielle, I had a question for you actually about support between in-classroom visits. Is there an aspect of the Dynamic Learning Project that provides virtual support between the visits? I mean, as we're thinking about sort of maximizing touch points and time, that I think that would be a good one to mention.
Since I'm on campus, when someone wants to talk, I usually see them in the hallway. So I try to make myself very visible. I'm in the hallway every passing period, walking around, or as many as I can be. I eat lunch in the teacher's lounge. I go hang out with teachers when they're on their conference period or when they're in PLC. So being present means that
anytime a question pops up or a challenge pops up, I'm right there to help problem solve and brainstorm and listen. So I don't provide virtual assistance in between anything unless I'm specifically asked, but I am in person all the time on my campus.
Great. Yeah. And actually, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, back to funding for that. I take a teacher position, which means classes on my campus are a little bit bigger because I'm not in the classroom. My first year that the teachers were super excited. My second year, I actually taught 2 math classes along with coaching full time. And this year I'm back to coaching full time because that was a teacher decision. The teachers on my campus went to our administrator and said, we need Danielle full-time back coaching. We don't like when there's restrictions on her schedule.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
If it is up to your teachers, they would love to have a support person on campus, even if it means their classes are 2 to 3 students bigger at the time.
Thank you.
And
well, can I
jump in with that?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Go ahead, Danny.
Okay, one thing that is essential to the question here is, does the coaching program that you're using offer some sort of exemplar a teacher can go back and look for and watch so that they can – the idea behind coaching is in between each time I meet with my coaches, I want them practicing what they've reflected on. And if they're able to go back and look at maybe a 2 to 3 minute exemplar clip of it occurring, they can use that for the in between times that we might meet in person or through a video conference. So, one thing that the district seem to think about and really pay attention to is coaching is great for your teachers as long as you have all the tools within the program that they need, and not putting it all on the coach to be there on demand all the time. Sometimes the right video, the right exemplar lesson can be on demand for them as well.
Mm-hmm.
And that's absolutely right.
Can I just jump in?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm just going to jump in because there are 2 questions that are popping up throughout the chat box that I want to make sure to address. One is this idea that you just alluded to, Jody, of the coach of the coaches. And I see that if you haven't taken a look at the chat box, please do, because there's a lot of good information in there. But I wanted to maybe ask that question about the coach of coaches, but then also point out an upcoming new publication called Coaching Matters that addresses this role of the coach champion that we're sort of talking about by Joellen Killian. She's just put that in the chat box, and I'm sure you know that will be a good resource for you in terms of coaching at sort of whatever level you're entering the conversation. So I don't know, Courtney, could you just speak really quickly about this idea of coaching coaches and how important that is, and then I do want to get back to Casey about the impact question.
Yes, so as part of training coaches, I work with a lot of teachers, like I said, and coaching skills are learnable. They're teachable, obviously, and they're learnable, and you're able to practice them and immediately implement. In fact, I'm going into a school next month to train a whole new group of teachers. So Jody's mentioning of, are there videos, are there tools that folks can have in between, that is part of the curriculum that I'm building so that there are, YouTube videos where I'm demoing skills so folks can have refreshers of those skills. And what I find, I run with my team a 9-day training. So it's an investment of time, and coaches are trained for 9 days. But what I really pride myself on with this program is how, like I said, I'm going to say easy, but how practical and learnable the skills are. So your coach isn't like a magic being that is just, has these gifts and no one else has them. And to Jody's point, and Danielle talked about this, yes, you have to take action with these skills. They're not meant to be theoretical. The difference is made by the action that you take based on the coaching skills you have. So I feel really strongly about this because my goal is to spread coaching because I've seen it. It works. I coach kids. I coach teens. I coach adults of all ages and professions, and they really are transformative skills that can be learned.
Great. Thank you. And I want to point out that in addition to the slides and the recording of the webinar, there are some resources at the end of this webinar. I'm not sure if we'll have time to go through them, but there's information about the program that Jody has spoken about. There's more information about the Dynamic Learning Project, and there is a link to some of the work that Courtney does. In addition to the Learning Forward resources, the book that I just mentioned, and a magazine issue that's all about coaching. So when you receive the follow-up email, it'll have all the slides and links in there for you to sort of pursue further. With our last few minutes, I really would love to get to this question for Casey about how do you measure the impact of coaching? And I know that's a little bit beyond the survey itself, but if you want to talk a little bit about that, I think that might be a nice way to reinforce the idea that coaching is a really important, valuable, high-performance investment. So, Casey.
And thank you so much to the panel for speaking to this as well and for all of the other topics that you shared about on the webinar today. So in terms of the value of coaching and how we've measured that, we didn't address it in the National Coaching Survey other than in teacher and coach perception of the value, but we did do a lot of research on this in the Dynamic Learning Project. And so Danielle and I mentioned a few things in the chat that we saw increased value in the coaching and the Dynamic Learning Project, and Danielle talked a little bit about this and the others as well. A big one was teacher satisfaction and the feeling that teachers felt supported and had less stress and were more satisfied in their role. And also increased impactful use of technology by students of the teachers who were coached. So we were, you know, excited to be able to get at that, especially with the focus of Dynamic Learning Project coaching being increased impactful use of technology, and also increased student engagement. And Danielle, I think you mentioned this, the number of authentic learning tasks increasing. So we did get down to the student level, which was really exciting. But we also spend a lot of time working with the coaches in the Dynamic Learning Project on storytelling and how you can tell the story of impact. So it's great if the data shows it, but you have to explain what the data means and what it actually looks like in the classroom and for teachers. And I think a really important connection to make is that we all know teacher effectiveness is the most important thing in student outcomes, are one of the most important things. And so you'll see great things if you support teachers, and we all know that intuitively. We all just have to tell that story. And I think elevate coaching as one of the best ways to support teachers.
Right. Thank you. Thank you so much. It just had come up a couple of times in the chat box, but I thought we would address it. So with the last minute we have here, I am going to just thank everyone for joining us today. Thank you to Casey and Heather and to Courtney and Danielle and Jody for really digging into this report and the findings and sharing your perspectives and for the great conversation that's gone on. And I think we'll continue to go on, given the energy in the chat box. So we at Learning Forward really appreciate your partnership and your participation. I'm going to quickly run through the resource slides that I just mentioned. Just so that you can see, we have a link to the blog that Heather mentioned about mentoring and coaching culture. Jody wrote an article about his experience with MTP coaching in Waco. You'll see the link there. Courtney has shared what it means to be a whole person coach in a slide at the end with a link where you can learn more. The MTP program that Jody is working with is recruiting for the next cohort of districts. So if you're interested in learning more about that program, there is a link here for more information. As I mentioned, we did a Learning Forward Learning Professional issue all about coaching, and you can find the link in this last slide. And then finally, next week, we are having a webinar about evidence and impact in which districts will share their stories, what they've done is worked on really distilling the impact of a professional learning approach and drawn out teacher and student data. So they'll each talk about what they've done in all of their districts. So with that, I'd just like to thank you all for joining us today and have a great rest of the afternoon. Thank you.